Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Faith is belief not despite of the evidence, but because of the evidence. But virtually everyone you will speak to, under 40, under 50 perhaps, and maybe even older, in Europe today, believes that faith is inherently irrational and opposed to empirical science and so on. So our faith is reasonable. We have the best product in the postmodern marketplace of ideas. What do I mean by that? Very simple. There is a postmodern marketplace. It's not as big as people say it is, because we might say our society has no absolutes. Yes, it does. You try getting a job, for example, on the BBC, or try getting on in politics in the United Kingdom if you're against same-sex marriage. Mm-mm. Untouchable. There are things that are untouchable in many cultures. But nonetheless, there's a general confusion in which people accept that you're allowed to have your different opinions and different ideas. We've actually, I don't like to think of the Bible as a marketing thing, but we have got the best product by a million miles compared to any other philosophy or way of thinking or life that people have. Then total apologetics, I use the word I don't like, the whole gospel to the whole person by the whole church. Why is it in the church you get people go, or even whole churches go, we are really into praise ministry, and we're really into prayer, and we're really into mercy ministry, and we're really into evangelism, and we're really into Bible teaching. You're a Christian church. A Christian church should be into all of these things. That's the point. The church is a gathering of, there isn't one individual who's got all the gifts, but it's a collection of individuals who are wielded together into one family. And so, total apologetics, if you like. I mean, I was talking to a brother who's here about what kind of ministry do we do? You know, is our ministry to drug addicts, is that evangelism? Is it worship? Is it? My argument is, it's everything. Because a drug addict comes into my church and wants to find out more about Jesus, let's say, got a problem with their drugs. There's a whole range of different things. They need to hear really good Bible teaching. They don't need a church where people only come on a Sunday morning, because they're part of a community which supports and upholds them, even in that drug addiction. So if they're going to give up their drug addiction, they need to be part of a community which does a whole lot more than meet on a Sunday morning. They don't need to be perceived as a victim. They need to be able to see themselves as having value in and of themselves because they're made in the image of God. And it takes a whole church to get that message over a long period of time. So, I think I'll maybe come back to some of these things a little bit later in the question, but the where can I find Jesus? I really do want to tell you that story just to indicate where we're going from here. Reality television, which is an oxymoronic statement because it's not real, but nonetheless, it's cheap and it's easy to make. And basically, you film people who are being told they're going to get their 15 minutes of fame. You know, we're on the telly. You know what it's like? There's a camera filming, and if this was if I was a politician doing an interview, or if I really was Lionel Messi, then some of you would be standing behind me going, look, I'm on the telly, mama, you know, right? So people want to get on reality TV. I watched a reality television program. I mean, I hate them. And I watched it, and I knew I shouldn't be watching it. It was like watching a train wreck. It was garishly fascinating. It's like watching, you know, I don't know, it's like watching the Eurovision Song Contest, which is totally culturally horrific. It's the kind of thing that gets played in purgatory, and yet 200 million people watch it because there's something, it's so bad, it's fascinating. Well, I was watching this reality TV program, and it was about a kid from a city in England called Derby. 17 years old, homosexual, sexually promiscuous, drugs, drink, swears like a trooper. Goes with a friend of his to do a kind of parent swap thing, I think. He goes to Atlanta, Georgia, in the US, and he's placed with an African-American Baptist pastor couple. Right now, it was an unbelievable, I mean, you talk about clash of cultures. and clash of worldviews. It was unbelievable. Now, my struggle was, I actually had a great deal of sympathy with the kids, sometimes more than I had with a couple different things, but they were actually fantastic. They were great. They were really tremendous. And lots of tensions, lots of fights, lots of trouble, Anyway, the program finishes, and the kid's been taken back to the airport. He's in the taxi, and the camera's on him, and the producer of the show says to him, "Have you enjoyed being here?" And he said, "Yeah, do you know this? I've loved it. These people are great, aren't they?" He says, "They're really into this guy called Jesus." And then he looked at the camera, and I never, ever forgot this. This moved me enormously, because his eyes filled with tears, and he said, "When I go back to England, where will I find Jesus? Is he in the Yellow Pages?" And the Yellow Pages is a thing in our phone book. If you want a plumber or, you know, an electrician or something, you look. And I was really moved by it. And I edited a magazine at the time in our denomination. And I phoned up my designer and said, "I want you to design the magazine like the Yellow Pages, because I'm going to run a lead article called 'Where Can I Find Jesus?' We find Jesus in the church. Now, here's the thing, if you've got your theology right. Bottom line is, in your communities, there are not tens of thousands of people wandering around going, 'Where can I find Jesus?'" That kid didn't ask that because he was looking for Jesus. Actually, he asked it because Jesus first found him. Even taking him to go as part of that TV program to meet this Christian couple. And so what we're looking at is to say, where can Jesus find these people and how does he find these people? And the reality is that for the vast majority, it is not going to be through Christian media. And it's not going to be through books, and it's not going to be through politics. It is really, really going to be through the local church. But they're not going to come to a local church in terms, because they think church building, church meeting. But they're not going to come to your gathering. Yeah, I mean, the sort of trendy, you know, latte-type Christians who will say, "Oh, well, if we just, you know, meet in a cafe, have a latte, or come to my house and have a cappuccino, people will want to come." Not if they live in an ordinary working-class housing estate. In my city, anyway, you invite someone to come to your house, "Would you like to come to my house for a latte and a Bible study?" They're going to go, "Whoa, pervert." They're going to think there's something really wrong with you. They really are. So, and then you say, you know, "Would you like to come to my church?" Remember two guys I spoke to on the streets of a town called Livingston, a kind of post-industrial town, and managed to persuade them. They were both gang leaders. Managed to persuade them to come to the church to watch the film. I mean, how cliched is this? It was the cross and the switchblade, you know. But it was about all we had at the time. In fact, we haven't got much better now. And it was great for its time, fantastic. But I took these two kids, not kids. They were two gang leaders. I mean, they'd. And one of them, as I'm walking, he's dripping sweat. I said, "What's wrong with you?" He said, "I can't go in that church. I can't go in that church." I said, "What?" He said, "Are you scared?" He said, "I'm terrified, Dave." I said, what are you scared of?" I said, "Forgive me saying this, but you arrange to knife people at weekends for fun. You know, you arrange to fight. You have your territory. This is what you do. And you're walking into a church where the only thing that's probably going to hurt you might be the baking. That's it." And he said, "No, listen, man." He says, "What happens if I get converted?" I said, "Converted? I'm glad you know the word." He says, "Yeah, but what if I... I said, "That is what I'm praying for." But he was petrified. He was terrified. Now, how do we get people to get the gospel and do it through the local church? And I think it's important to do it through the local church. I'm going to mention different areas until we go as far as we can in terms of time. Society. What do we mean by that? We're in society. We are salt and light within the world. It is an enormous mistake for church to become Amish, for church to become isolated. It is an enormous mistake to go and live in a monastery. When Europe was dominated by monasteries, the church dominated the political world, but the gospel was not communicated. You know, one of the most interesting things that happened at the Reformation was church doors were closed during the week. Now, isn't it funny? We've gone reverse of that. We're now saying, "Oh, no, we've got to open our church doors. People come in all the time." Actually, church doors were closed during the week. Why? To get the people, the Christians, out into the community. So, I know a lot of us think, unless we're Saddleback, you know, a big church in the U.S. or something, providing everything, we've got to be providing mercy ministries and pregnancy counseling and kids work and so on, then we're not really a church. I'm looking and I'm saying, maybe we need to cut back on a huge amount of our programs and stuff because we haven't a chance of reaching people because we don't know any non-Christians. Or all that we're doing is providing services, whether literal church services or, you know, social services for people. We just don't have time to actually spend with people and be with people. People get really, really maxed out in terms of time and money. And we need to be involved in society. Now, I do think that can be programs such as, I mentioned, there's a thing there called Road to Recovery. Huge issue in my city, drug addiction. Huge issue in Scotland overall, alcohol problems. Now, I don't think it's the church's job to solve all of those. We can't. But I do think that people who come to us for help, we should be able to offer it in some way or other. And I think we should be involved in things like that. Here's the difference between my theology as a Christian and my theology as a non-Christian. And non-Christians have theology, have a philosophy. My theology as a Christian says, my theology as a non-Christian, actually, when I'm walking down the street and I see a man lying in his own urine, having drunk himself into a stupor, with a begging bowl beside him, my theology as a non-Christian, to be honest, is to say, I wish that scumbag would get off the streets, and I wish the council would do something about it. And who knows, he probably deserves it. Now, an awful lot of people think like that. I know you're not supposed to, but in reality, that's how people do think. But as a Christian, I might walk past, I might say, I'm not going to give him money because he's just going to waste it. But that's a human being made in the image of God. And I have to value him as much as I would value if Prince William was to walk into my church. You know, and that's difficult. It's difficult. Society. You've got to be care for your society. The church overall, you know, for example, I mean, an absolute classic. If your church doesn't do this, it's not being biblical. You should pray, first of all, for kings and those in authority. So who are your local members of the European Parliament? Who are your local members of your national government? Who are your local councillors? Do you pray for those? You say, well, what's the point? I'll tell you what the point is. The point is, I find, as I've been praying for people like that, get in contact with them. I just find it fascinating that as churches we're able to do that. We hold an election hustings. When it's a general election or a Scottish election, we will hold a hustings in our church. And we did one for this last general election, well attended, probably about 100, I'm not sure, 150 people maybe. But all of the candidates wrote me independently afterward and said that was by far the best hustings we had. And curious, maybe want to find out more. So I think we've got to be involved in our society at all different kinds of levels as churches. Not that we're running the society, but we're looking in our area, what's the particular needs in our area? For example, I don't normally like questionnaires, the kind of questionnaires that the Jehovah's Witnesses do, which is they come up to you and they say, I've got a questionnaire to help you pass your driving test. That's page one. And then by the time you get to page 10 is, would you like to live forever on planet Earth? You know, and that's dishonest. And there's Christian evangelism like that. I've just been sent in a questionnaire from a team that are coming from the States to Scotland, and they said, these are the questions we want to ask. Do you believe that there's a judgment day and you'll be going to hell? Well, that one's gone. You know, and I'm going to work through all these questions, and there's only two, I think, that are valid in my context, in our context. Questionnaires should be done to get information. We did one in our area because we thought our area was a predominantly student area. So we did a survey to find out who lived there. You know what we discovered? 25% students, but 25% elderly, many single. What did that teach us? There was a need. And so we started up an old folks club, and people started coming along. I mean, you've got to know your society. You've got to know your area. You've got to, as a church, think about who you're trying to reach. You want to start a church in Prague. You make it an English-speaking church. You know that you are going to get English-speaking people and tourists and business people and students, perhaps. If that is what you're aiming for, well, I have a big question mark about that in lots of ways. Well, just understand that. I mean, but what if you want to reach Czech people? What if you want to reach people in a particular area? What are they like? What's the society like? You know, even how you determine the times of your services And the length of your services, when it comes to worship, is going to be tied in with that. So, society is one thing. Science. I do think this is a big one. We were awarded a sum of money from a Templeton Foundation as part of a group of congregations to do something called Christians in Science. Scientists in Congregations. There's another group called Christians in Science. But because this is such a major defeater belief, I think you've got to try and deal with it. I think you've got to encourage those in your congregation who are scientists to reach out to other scientists. I think you've got to teach your congregation that in actual fact, science depends on a theistic worldview at least, if not a Christian worldview. I think you have got to avoid the constant arguments about creation evolution. I think that's a huge mistake that lots of churches make. Because that's an in-house church discussion often about the age of the earth. What you really have got to do is you've got to go back to the really big questions of science. In fact, you've got to ask, what is science? What's the point of it? Someone will say to you, how would you answer this question, for example? Science has given us toasters and iPhones and lots of other things, and religion has given us wars and evil. Well, how do you answer that? Because that's what people think. You will have lots of people whose default philosophy is, I believe in science, but they don't even know what science is, and they know nothing about science. So just as a church collectively, I think sometimes we need to think about that. Cafes. I have a couple of copies of this book called Quench, which we produced. I'm not saying we produced it. Tom at the back there, it's his responsibility, really, because they'd asked me for ages. We do a lot of cafe evangelism, and I like doing it. And they asked me to write something down about it, and I kept saying, yes, 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 and I didn't do it. And then one day, Tom and another guy with Solas took me up into our church upstairs hall. There was a camera there. They sat me down, and they asked questions, and I answered the questions, and then they went away, wrote them up, edited it, and we produced this wee book on doing Quench, coffee shop evangelism. Now, I got an idea last night about a new idea. I'm always getting ideas about whiskey evangelism, but we'll think about that one later. But it seemed to me that I was sitting all sad and alone the first night here. Second night, I have a big bottle of malt whiskey. I have so many friends. It's wonderful. But maybe. But coffee evangelism or coffee shop evangelism. How does that work for me? It's very, very simple. Go to a place, small town, doesn't matter. Go to a secular coffee shop, normally. Might be a case for a Christian one. Talk on a particular subject for 20 minutes. Sex and society. The God delusion. Just loads of things. Maybe go to a bookshop cafe and talk about a particular book. Have people firing questions. It's the kind of thing that's really risky because people get up and walk out. It's the kind of thing that you could organize and nobody could come to. It's the kind of thing you mustn't pack with Christians. But it is wonderful. For me, it's Acts 17 Marketplace. And I think this works across Europe in different ways. It's actually quite a lot of work. But it's one of the most effective ways of getting into the marketplace at a personal level. You know, I write a lot of stuff on the internet and do things. And people. And usually when I go into these cafes, I've got quite a few atheist friends who stalk me. And some of them will turn up at these things. And quite often what they write afterwards is something along the lines of, Robertson is actually not as evil as we think he is, which is an interesting concept, even atheist evil. But they'll say, we met him in person, and you know he's not as bad as it, as because when you're doing something on internet, when you're doing something in writing, it never conveys tone. The tone is always perceived by the listener. The body language is made up by the listener. Whereas you're doing it in person, you're standing out there, and providing you're not the nutcase standing on the city square yelling at people, but you're actually talking to people, interacting, getting people even to interact to that level is a massive victory. So please think about that kind of thing, and we can maybe talk about that as well. Music. Atheists ain't got no songs. Steve Martin, Google that. Wonderful, wonderful comedy thing. I wish... if I'd had the time, I would have put it up for you, but I knew we weren't going to have time. But just go Google it yourself. Music is such a great way of communicating. Now, That doesn't necessarily mean Christian music. My view generally is the only Christian music I've ever seen really work with non-Christians was a group of Russian Orthodox monks who were like, man, that is so spiritual. Even my most atheist friends were saying, they were wonderful. They were great. They were a bunch of drunkards as well, but that's another problem. We won't go there. An American jazz band who were fantastic when they played secular jazz and were rubbish when they played Christian jazz because they kept preaching in between each song. And I kept thinking, if I hear one more song about Christian martyrs, I'm going to slit my wrists. It was really that bad. So it was the contrast was quite phenomenal. The one that really works everywhere is basically black gospel music. Because everyone in you've got to love that, unless, you know, you're sort of racist. But I was going to mention the nationality there, and I thought I'd better not. Shut up. Move. But music is just great for reaching out to people in lots of ways, especially if it's really good. See, last night, I'll be honest with you, last night I go to the culture event, I think, I love Ruth Naomi Floyd, I love her to pieces, love her music, and she's very special to me in lots of ways, because when I was really ill, she came, there was a concert, first thing I went to, and she sang a song called Motherless Child, and I've never, sometimes I feel like I'm going to die, and basically that was me, and so I thought, oh, I'd love to go and hear Ruth, but I thought, I'm not sure I'm into this, and then the guy from Slovakia, the cellist, when he started, I thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be dreadful. And I'm sitting on my laptop writing things as I go along because I'm writing down my things, so I'm basically writing a kind of live tweeting and so on. And I got about 2 minutes into it and I thought, oh my goodness, this guy is brilliant. And I love the music. I love the style. I just thought he was stunning. Now, I know I could take him anywhere and people would be, and the thing is, it's so emotional, the music, that way, his stuff, you know, I just thought, wow, so basic principle of music, make sure it's good, you know, the last thing you want in your church is to put something on that's a rubbish choir, you know, it's not just got to be good, they've got to be really, really good, if they're not really, really good, don't do it, play something, play a record, CD or something. But you can really use music in all different kinds of outreach, in different ways. I mean, another thing, just a very simple thing, you can discuss music. I said from Mozart to Metallica. Is that? You know, come on. How can music work with, you know, say Metallica? I do think Europe, you crisscross all over the place. We had a Swedish guy come to our church. I'm sorry, some of you know this story, but to me it's still an amazing story. And he asked me to go to his wedding. He was with us for 7 years, so I went over and helped do his wedding in Sweden. And sitting at the table, all the Swedish customs we have, and I'm sitting behind this huge, big Swedish guy with long red hair. And he said, hi, my name. I'll not say what his name was. Let's just call him Eric Gustavsson or something. You know, Swedish name. So he says, hi, I'm Eric. I said, hi, Eric, how are you? I'm fine. He said, I don't believe in electricity, which is an opening line that's quite interesting. It certainly got my attention. Maybe we can learn something from evangelism from that. I said, really? What do you mean? He said, I live in the woods, in a cabin, and we have running water, and we have no electricity. We have candlelight. And I thought, okay, thanks, Henrik, for sitting beside me, the only lunatic in Sweden. That's great, you know. And I said, well, I tried to move the conversation on. I said, Eric, what do you do? He said, I'm the lead singer in a death metal band. I said, death metal? Like, not heavy metal, not even black metal, but death metal. He said, yeah, oh no, heavy metal's too light for us. I went, okay. So death metal is just, think of heavy metal sped up 10 times and yelled 10 times louder. And my first question to him was, how do you do that when you don't believe in electricity? And he said, well, I make an exception for the guitar. So that's fine. And I said, well, come on. And he said, do you make a living out of that? He said, oh yeah, we play to 10,000 people in northern Germany or in Norway, Scandinavia, mostly, sometimes America. But he said, big, big thing. And he said, we're a band called Crimson Tide. He said, we're one of the big black metal bands in the world. And I said, black metal, I would have thought Satanism. He said, no, it's just a style. And he said, actually, we're all Christians in my band. Okay, so I'm sitting beside a Christian death metal singer who doesn't believe in electricity. no one is ever going to believe this. You know, this is why Christianity is so wonderful, by the way. You don't have to make stuff up. It just happens. And then I thought, well, where do we go with this? And he said, I am a Christian. He said, I really am. He said, actually, I'm in training to be the only Reformed Episcopal priest in Sweden. And I thought, at that point, my mind's going to shut. I thought, you will have no problem in initiating any conversation with anyone because you will blow completely any stereotype that people have. A Reformed Episcopal, long red-headed, death metal, anti-electricity singer. Yeah, I can go with that. Music reaches people. I'll just shoot through. Art, we can talk about art if you want. A bottom line is, if you cannot use art to reach the gospel, you are either thick or you don't understand what the gospel is. Art is so simple to use. In every single European country, you can use art to reach the gospel. Medicine, I mentioned, because throughout European history, the hospitals have been started and are still actually significantly both funded and run by Christians, the Christian philosophy and everything that's involved. History. To me, this is one of the great unused methods of proclaiming the gospel. People may not be interested in coming to church, but I remember we did something for older people one time and asked someone to come and speak on the history of the Timex factory, a big multinational company, that if you were a woman in Dundee, you either worked there or another company called NCR. At some point in your life, it was a rite of passage, virtually every woman, working class woman anyway, worked in these places. So we did this. I got a guy from Timex to come and talk about the history of Timex and why it closed and so on. And we began a series of local history lectures. And I said that the next one is going to be about the world's worst poet called William Topaz McGonagall. And he actually was a member of my church many years ago. Not many people know that, but he is genuinely the world's worst poet in any language. Brilliantly, brilliantly bad. But he was a member of my church, so I did a lecture entitled William Topaz McGonagall and Robert Murray McShane. Robert Murray McShane is a Protestant saint. And he was there and very famous historically. And people came and listened to that, and you get to communicate the gospel in that way. Honestly, history is everywhere. You can use history as a congregation. There are people in your congregation who've got histories. The media, big, big, big one. Use the media. I'll maybe say more about the Solas magazine. I will say more about Solas magazine at the end. But think about secular media. For example, local newspapers, not so much putting adverts in, they're always looking for copy. Give them information. Tell them what's going on in your church. Give them news stories so that if it's a particular good news story, if you like, you've got a food bank in your church or something. But also, write to local newspapers, drip, drip, dripping the Christian view. I did that for ages, and people would say to me, even I have to say my own friends and family would say, what are you doing? What a waste of time writing to the Scotsman or the Courier. And then one Sunday, this couple turned up at church, and I said, nice to see you, you're visiting, yeah, what are you doing? They said, well, to be honest, we've traveled about 30 miles because we've been reading your stuff in the newspaper, and we didn't know that there was anybody who thought like that anymore. I said, I'm the last of the dinosaurs. And I said, are you Christians? They said, no, but we want to find out. So I was so encouraged by that. And it's a big principle of evangelism is it's not the big explosion. It's the drip, 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 drip. Why do you think that the vast majority of society in Western Europe, at least, are now pro-same-sex marriage? Have they thought about it? Has it been a big explosion? Has it been something rational? No, it's just been the drip, 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 drip for decades of the propaganda involved with that. So we need to think about how we use the media, and that includes, by the way, internet media and so on. Just one or two things I want to say about that. I mean, it's a huge, huge subject. If you've got a church website, please, please, please make sure it's simple and up to date. Now, I say that as a hypocrite, but maybe this is not true now, because Phil is sitting here, he's in my congregation, and he's now responsible for ensuring our website is up to date. So I'm hoping it's up to date when I go back and I'll check. No pressure. But you go to a church website and they're advertising events that were 2 years ago. What do people think? They think, okay, they don't care. Why should I care? So make sure your website is simple, make sure it's up to date, make sure it's accessible. Facebook, Twitter and so on, I use these things. I hate them, but I use them. Use them wisely. Use them to get information. Certainly in my situation, the number one way to get publicity about an event is Facebook. I think 95% of my congregation are wired in the sense of on not drugged or stoned, but you know what I mean. And I think you can use that, use it as outreach, use wee video clips. They're not going to come to your church, are they? So what do you do? What I suggest is a simple thing. Produce a wee business card with your website address on it that when you meet people, you say, you know, you may want to come to church. Go onto this website and click on one of the videos there and you'll see what church is like. And then interview people. Why do you come to church? So you have a young woman saying, well, I never used to come to church, but... Because you see, the biggest reaction I get from people who come to visit our church is, wow, I didn't know it was like this, and I didn't know that normal people came. Well, they're not going to come anyway, but if you give them something, just a simple interview can make a big difference, and that's something I hope we're going to develop. Philosophy, everyone's got a philosophy. Get people to start thinking about philosophy. You don't have to be William Lane Craig or Alvin Plantinga, but you do have to encourage people to think about how they think. And then the church. For me, that's just, you got to think about your church all the time. How does the church reach out to people? What kind of church are we? Someone comes into this church. I went to a church with 7 people. When I went, 4 of them left. Good Scottish revival. How do you grow a church like that? It's tiny. You can try and attract Christians, but actually, a church that size, it's almost impossible because Christians want to go to already successful churches. In fact, one of the biggest problems you face in evangelism is when your church grows, because then Christians all start coming. Take it, because they want to be part of something successful. And you want to say, go away. Well, you don't want to say go away because it's, you know, but if it takes the edge off the evangelism, you're a church of 7 people, you've got no option. You're not a sexy church. Christians aren't going to come and join you. 18 years before one Christian family came to us. 18 years was in St. Peter's before one Christian family came. Despite the brilliant preaching, despite the humble service of the pastor, despite all of that, the only way you can grow is people being converted. It's really, to be honest. I mean, then what happens, of course, is you do get people who come. You get Christians who catch the vision and who want to share, and that's fantastic. You get other Christians who've been bruised and wounded, and they come for healing. That's fantastic as well. But your DNA has got to be in the church, evangelism. And that actually is the question I want to leave it, because I just want to ask you, is evangelism considered like international mission in most churches? It's a specialist subject for a few particularly dedicated people who've got nothing else better to do. Or is it something that at night your people pray and weep about? How long has it been, O Lord, since we saw someone profess faith in you, in this church, and become part of it? That's, I think, if you've got that passion, I think in a strange kind of way, the rest of it will work out. It's not that difficult, says he.